All right. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 99%. Whew, I almost said 9%. That's not very good. I am here with Elliot and Marilyn, and today we're going to talk a little bit about lifting heavies. Before we started this, I was just telling Marilyn how I've just got back in the gym a little bit more, and I am extremely sore, like hard to get out of bed in the morning. So it's super fun. Hopefully there are other people thinking about doing the same thing soon. So before we dive too far into like what we do with athletes, I just wanted to give everyone a little bit of background of our own experience, tossing the iron around. So Marilyn, you want to, give us at least a summary of, all the years you've spent in the gym?
Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone, to the 9.99% show. That was awesome. just saying, we got to keep it light. Yeah, I have a really long history with the gym. I'll try and summarize it somewhat, and maybe we can dive into it throughout the chat a bit deeper. But I started out kind of as a gym rat before I ever got into triathlon, when I was doing show jumping and other sports. And through my entire triathlon career, I kept gym as part of the equation, really consistent and steady, you know, 2-3 times a week. And actually what those gym routines look like were extremely different to when I transitioned into, I retired out of endurance sport, and I actually took up strength sports as a competitive athlete. And I went into the whole world of learning what it meant to compete as a strength athlete and really embrace that. And started out like most endurance athletes do when they get out of endurance sport and are dabbling. I started with a bit of CrossFit, but grew pretty quickly tired of CrossFit and didn't really understand it that much. I got frustrated quickly. So I went into the pure strength sports and went to Olympic lifting, and actually went to, you know, quite a few high level weightlifting competitions. Weightlifting, the differences, if you're going to talk about strength sports, know the differences. So obviously there's bodybuilding, there's powerlifting, there's weightlifting, there's strongman. So that just like in endurance sports, there's different elements, different sports. So weightlifting is snatch and clean and jerk. And that's a total of those two. So I did that for a couple of years.
The Olympic lifts.
That's right.
Quite literally.
The Olympic lifts, yeah. And it's the only strength sport that's in the Olympics, which is threatened right now, a whole nother topic to be tossed out of the Olympics. But anyways, and then did a little bit of time competing in powerlifting, which is a bench, squat, and deadlift. And did like state championships and that kind of thing. And then when I finished up with that and decided to come back down to endurance sport, I haven't touched a weight since, really. I've done a little bit. and there's a whole story behind that and reasons behind all of that and the training approaches in each one of those areas and those times throughout my, if you want to call it, career with the gym and weightlifting. There's really specific things that go behind each one of those, like what the training looked like, why, the decisions that are made, and right up to now, what I feel like is a big difference between my experience and what you might do with certain athletes and different things. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Elliot, what about you? You spent much time in the gym?
In the last 15 years, very, very little. But from age 14 to 20, more or less lived in it. I was a competitive wrestler. One of my high school coaches is quite famous nationally, and he got real sick, and they made a documentary on ESPN about how the pull-up was his whole like thing for life and how he never lost a pull-up competition. And that's bullshit, because I beat him and he tackled me off the bar and he was in his underwear trying to beat me, so he wasn't wearing any extra clothes. To be fair to him, he was 185 pounds and I was 105. So yeah. But yeah, I did a bunch of lifting for wrestling throughout high school, and spent a bunch of time in the gym. And as far as, first I kind of was running simultaneously and then did triathlon, and it became quite apparent that I was a little too bulky up top. and that never really fully went away. I just got weaker. But yeah, and all my lifting since then is very specific to injuries. So I would say as far as strength training goes, I know way more about Pilates and yoga and basic standing things and things to keep you healthy. But if you go way back, yeah, I was doing the same thing, squats and bench presses, et cetera, throwing balls against the wall and screaming real loud, all that fun stuff.
Awesome. Thanks for that summary at the end. That's good.
Yeah. there's a lot of screaming. There's a lot of big guys who you're not sure if they're about to, you know, what end it's about to come out, but it's coming out somewhere. So yeah.
I think that comes back to it almost getting kicked out of the Olympics. Is that kind of all the same?
No.
That's not all.
That's fine. You can do that in almost any Olympic sport.
Well, but the reasoning behind the aggression, maybe. But growing up as a swimmer, I ended up in the gym a fair bit, especially as I got further along in my swimming career. I ended up lifting a bit in college and also was a bit bulkier back then, like probably about 30 pounds heavier. And then once I got into triathlon, I basically left the gym and didn't do anything for a very long time until I got injured and then, you know, started working my way back in a little bit more and more. Back with Elliot, I was integrating a little bit of stuff in there to try and stay healthy. And then since, you know, have gotten older and had to really increase my time in the gym. So it's pretty consistently two times a week. And then occasionally it'll be three now, especially when training's a little bit lighter. But yeah, so I've had kind of an ongoing relationship with the gym with a fluctuation of how much I'm actually spending time in there. But the reason we're talking about lifting now is that we're probably heading towards what people might be considering their off season, depending on where they're at. And this year is a little bit weird, but in general, it's kind of the time of year where it's getting a little colder outside. People are starting to spend a little bit more time inside. And that kind of leads to a lot of people having interest in maybe lifting weights again. So I guess let's talk a little bit about whether or not we think that's a good thing, if we do it ourselves, if we prescribe it for our athletes. So Marilyn, where are you at with that, with your athletes and lifting and spending time in the gym?
Yeah. I mean, the part about gym work is it's going to be really, really different for every athlete and depending on their needs and their background. And this is where I feel like people can go really wrong in terms of, if they approach strength training like they approach their triathlon training, they're probably going to get themselves into some kind of trouble. And there needs to be the accounted for like sets, reps, and exercises and the type of athlete that they are. And primarily the only reasons to be doing gym for another sport is if it's going to make you better at that sport that you're doing. So are you getting stronger at that sport? So are you more resilient, less injury prone? Are you actually getting stronger for swim, bike, and run? And so whatever.
Whoa. Come on, Marilyn. More is more. Right. More is always more.
Right. So when I talk about like my history about with the strength sports, obviously if you're training specifically for a strength sport, that's going to look really, really different than if you're training to get stronger in triathlon. Right. And people tend to approach their strength training like they do their triathlon training. They're going at it, you know, 3 to 5 times a week. They're in there for an hour. They're doing a lot of reps and sets. It's maybe not specific to what they need exactly in terms of injury prevention and knowing where their weaknesses are. It's not set up right in terms of programming with the swim, bike, and run. So those are all the kinds of mistakes that I see triathletes make and triathlon coaches make when they start integrating strength training into endurance sports athletes, like they're programming through the winter, is they just throw as many sets and reps and weights as they can, as many times a week as they can into the program. And they just say, go at it however you want within the sessions of swim, bike, and run. And that is almost always counterproductive and a disaster. Maybe for the odd person, they get something out of that just because they're doing something, but it's definitely not the best way to go about getting stronger for your sport. So, so I think it's really important to address every single athlete individually about what they're going to need, you know, male, female, weaknesses, strengths, history, all of the same things that we do with training. It's just, I think as endurance athletes and coaches, we don't take that quite seriously enough and educate ourselves enough on the actual strength training end of things to do it the right way. So that's kind of where, I don't know if I actually answered your question there, Jesse.
Well, you just checked off everything on my notes, basically. So I think we're done. I think that was good. Good job, guys. Oh, man.
I mean, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that one thing I just really wanted to repeat that you said is that the idea behind it is actually getting better at swim, bike, run. And I do think that like you said, like you get all these A types in the gym and they're like, well, I want to get better at like bench pressing and I want to get these big numbers and like kind of lose sight of like whether or not that actually correlates to anything that they're doing outside of that. And so that's a big point that, I just want to make sure that that's kind of like the main theme here.
The biggest question I feel like you always hear is I got dropped on the bike going up hills. I need to get stronger. Let's do deadlifts, you know, and sure, maybe you need to do a deadlift, but that's not your reason why. Right. Or I'm not, you know, like my arms got tired when I was running. I need to do bench press. And they're like, well, it's still an endurance sport at the end of the day. So.
Yeah, you'll find it really interesting. Actually, I have an article somewhere buried in my site that Matt actually wrote about strength training and endurance athletes. And his biggest piece of advice being a strength coach, he was a strength coach at NAU and he's been in the strength sports for over 30 years, a competitive strength athlete. He's been a head track and field coach and did the strength training program for, you know, over 500 athletes of all different levels. And his big thing was with runners and all his endurance athletes. And he's like, oh yeah, they should just be doing hills. He's like, that's their strength work. He's like, you know, if you look at the article, I guess the summary of the article, now obviously that's not entirely the case. And there's a lot of different things around that, but it's just another piece of information out there to say, like someone who actually comes from that world isn't, you might think that the first thing they're going to say is, oh, let's put you on a squat cycle. Let's do a 3-month squat cycle and improve your leg strength for going uphill. And he was like, oh, he's like, there'd be very, very few endurance runners I'd actually ever have them, you know, do any kind of squats. He's like, oh, maybe, you know, some plyometrics and jumping and single leg stuff and real specific stuff like that. But
Marilyn, you should give a quick background on who Matt is, relationship to you how accomplished he is in his sport, because that is important, because it's clear he knows what he's talking about when it comes to strength. So it would make sense he'd put the pieces together when it comes to hanging around you and endurance sport.
Yeah, sure. Well, Matt's my husband, so I feel like I know him fairly well. And he's been a competitive strength athlete, like I said, for well over 30 years, was on the U.S. national team for Olympic lifting, has been on the world's team powerlifting, went to the Olympic trials in 2004 for weightlifting, like I said, strength and conditioning sport at NAU, and then at Mountain View as well. So yeah, really, really long history. He's worked for Catalyst Athletics as a coach and writer and contributor for, oh my gosh, I think, I don't even know the number of years now, but you can find a lot of his articles, books. He was part of they did a movie even on strength sports with them. So long, long histories, coached athletes to, you know, national championships, records, Olympic teams, Olympic trials, that kind of stuff. So he knows what he's talking about for sure.
Yeah, he's not like the best CrossFitter in your town. He's like, want to make sure that people understand who you're talking about and that, cause that frames how you see lifting to endurance sports. But, I've been around people who lifted quite a bit, but you know, I've also, you know, as far as like endurance sports, we've all been around people of that high caliber. But I think at the end of the day, we understand like what kind of stress does a human body need to meet the goal. And when he said, oh, you need to run hills, that's because he understands the goal isn't how fast you run up the hill one time. It's how fast you run it up 100 times. Right. Yeah. And the same thing applies for your old coach and riding up hills and you're like, why would you ride uphill in a big gear? Why would you ride up hills at all? Literally the name of my company, Mountain Endurance, is based off the idea that if you head your ass up a mountain, you're going to get stronger.
Right. Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, I think, and I think there's, you know, we can definitely talk about, I'd love for us to all use different case studies of athletes that we have used different styles of strength training for, because in saying all of that, I certainly have athletes where it's been very beneficial for them to go through more of a classic strength training periodization and what that looks like in relationship to their training, the time of year, and why you would even choose that type of training for that athlete versus another athlete where you're like, look, all you're going to ever need is core work. And obviously there's, and let's also talk about the differences. What is the difference between actual strength training in terms of sets, reps, and load and core work, you know, body weight work, plyometrics, all of those things. So I think this is such a huge topic, and picking the right program for the right athlete and the right programming is as important as the right programming for swim, bike, and run, and making that all fit. You don't just go, well, it's October and snowing, so I'm going to start going to the gym and lifting a bunch of weights. I mean, you can get really, really hurt that way and really do yourself some damage going backwards for your next season if you don't know what you're doing with that.
You know about gains with a Z though? Cause you'll get a lot of those.
Right. You got to drink a lot of protein.
Sorry, Jesse, you were going to say something.
I mean, I don't know how to top that. I guess I was just going to come back to the idea of like minimal effective dose that we kind of use in our normal training. I think that massively applies to strength training, right? Like we want people in the gym for the smallest amount of time possible, lifting kind of the least amount of weights they have to in order to accomplish the goal of getting better at swim, bike, and run, not making actual gains and drinking 30 grams of protein. Elliot?
I just want to add, it's really hard to absorb more than 20 grams of protein at a time, and you're welcome to take more, but look in the toilet for the rest of it. And it's true.
Well, I'm not looking. I'm just telling you. It's
the listener, Jesse's giving me a dirty look, and it's fair. It's warranted. That was a little gross, but it is true. But so to me with lifting, you said the minimal dose. Why would you do anything like any exercise, but lifting in particular? I like to add in like mobility, because it's not just this. It's not strength, but it's what range of motion are you doing a lift in, right? Like, are you doing like there's a thing like a half squat where you don't go as deep, but like how far are you flexing the muscle? And so for me, when I look at why would you do a lift or any sort of strength training, I add in mobility. And so to me it's do you have the mobility to do the exact like streamline or swim stroke that you want to do and feel comfortable while doing it? Do you have the mobility to be, if it's long course, in your aero bars, very comfortable in the most aerodynamic bike position? And do you have the mobility for like your leg extension behind you to run? And for some of us, it's even thoracic mobility, like with tight rib cage, et cetera. If you have the mobility there, and then do you have the base strength for each of those movements, or do you have close to the base strength? And in a lot of those cases, like it's essentially you're becoming like a little bit of a physical therapist. And that's going to determine, okay, one, do you have the mobility in all those areas? Like a lot of people are close to, and maybe they need to work on it in a certain area. And then you add those areas of mobility you need to work on. And then you question, do you have strength enough to do the highest end of any speed work you might be doing, or maybe 5 or 10% more than that? And sometimes the answer is no, and a lot of times the answer is no. So that's like my little basic framework I like to use.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think you need to. The other thing about, I guess the one thing we didn't say at the very beginning is you have to identify if an athlete needs just sport specific strength, being hills. Paddle work in the, you know, paddle work in the pool, you know, hill bounding on the running, that kind of stuff, long runs uphill, those kinds of things, big gear on the bike. So is it going to be an athlete that just needs mobility and sport specific type strength, maybe some bands and cords and, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's going to be really all they need. Or is it an athlete who actually needs a gym program? So that's probably your first step of what you're looking at when you look at someone. And then, yeah, assessing what exercises are going to be the best exercises for that athlete based on what you're seeing in their swim, bike, and run. And then, you know, choosing the sets and reps for those exercises and why you're doing them for, you know, nobody really should be in the gym any longer than 30 minutes. I mean, as a endurance athlete, if you're in the gym 30 minutes twice a week, you should have a program that addresses what you need within that time. And any more than that is probably too much on top of your swim, bike, and run.
I'm going to slightly disagree.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
If you've been in the sport for a really long time, and depending on your age and who you are, I think a lot of people, you could use the 40, like somewhere between 35 and 55. If you're older than 55 and I'm coaching you, I'm probably going to encourage some sort of strength work. And you make a point of like, there's probably too much time in the gym, but like, I see some value of like two lifts. And if you're lifting heavier, you might need more time in between those lifts. And the reason I would have them in the gym in the first place is just like max force production. So like the ability like that for those muscles to even contract that many muscle fibers at the same time. And so that's sometimes something I have for people who I am certain they want to be active in the sport for a really long time.
So when like when you're programming something like that, are you including like the amount of time? I'm not talking about the amount of time they spend doing mobility to start with and getting warmed up for that, but the actual sets and reps and exercises, you're giving them more than 30 minutes worth of work.
Yeah. But a lot of it is maybe you wouldn't consider strength work, but I would say they're still in the gym. Right. So I guess that's the discrepancy. So like, yeah, there's going to be a warm up and they're going to be doing stuff that's more essentially physical therapy. But
yeah, that stuff can take forever. I mean, that can take 30 minutes before you ever get to the actual lifting part.
Yeah. So, but if you're just going to say like, yeah, they're going to do three sets of squats and three sets of deadlifts, and then they're going to do some bench and some lat pull and maybe not much else, or depending on what they're doing, maybe they're doing a various series of jumps. But if they do happen to be going heavier and they're very progressed, I can totally see a point where they might be doing a lift and taking a couple minutes. And a lot of times they're triathletes, so they're going to superset it with an upper body lift and it might take less time. But I guess the 30 minute line, I would say, oh yeah, there's certainly be a scenario where it might take 40, 45, 50 minutes.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Not for the average person, but like, I think for an older athlete who really wants to be competitive, and like, for instance, I coach a guy who's really competitive in the draft legal stuff, and he has to like really be able to accelerate on a bike, and he's been riding bikes for 40 years. And so like to him being able to cover those accelerations, like he does all the riding he can more or less handle. He does all the running he can handle, but he can, in the off season, he can really use some of that help for just making sure he can still apply pressure to the pedals.
Sure. Yeah. Jesse.
The other thing I guess I wanted to add to that is just that I think that the mobility, or whatever you want to call it, like the warm up before you lift, is oftentimes for a lot of our athletes almost as important as like whatever strength work they're doing. So I like to include that in the time just because it makes them feel good to check that box. Like I give them an hour lift and say 35 minutes of that is like foam rolling and whatever else, like body weight work that they're like, you know, call it warm up, call it working on range of motion, whatever you want to call it. But that's, you know, that's some of the really good stuff that's going to maybe stay with them all year. And so, I like to include that in the time so that it gives them that warm, fuzzy feeling when they get the green box for doing all their mobility.
I do the same thing. I include like a, you know, you put warm up and then you put, you know, all the band work and their core work and stuff like that. And then, yeah, that can take up to, you know, 25, 30 minutes, that kind of thing. And then the crux of the, like you would call it, their main set, the actual strength training that they're going to do, then that portion itself shouldn't be. And I guess where I might be thinking, where I've seen it from a lot of coaches, obviously I don't think any of I know I certainly wouldn't. I don't think either of you would do this. I've seen coaches prescribe things like, we're going to do 100 squats. We're going to do, you know, we're going to do superset, like these ridiculous amount of reps and sets that it ends up taking. We're not talking about like the mobility and the warm up and the core work that you guys are talking about for 30 minutes. I would do the same thing. I could put like, oh, strength is an hour. And for 30 minutes, this is what you're going to do, you know, leg swings and hip distractions and single leg RDLs and, you know, Samson lunge to open up the hips and all that stuff before you ever get to,
Samson lunge.
That's, you can look on my YouTube channel.
Okay. I'll do that.
But it's, but yeah. And then you know, so all of that stuff before you do like your main set of like 6x5 push pulls at prescribed sets, reps and weights. And that only takes you maybe 20 minutes. So yeah, you might be in there an hour. However, I guess where maybe obviously none of us would do this, but I see plenty of coaches out there right now programming things like an hour's worth of lifting weights. And total sets and reps, like we're talking like 100 by 100s and all these different things. And I'm like, that's
what's 100 by 100?
100 by 100s, it's 10 reps. What is it? It's the German volume training. If you look up German volume training
for lifters.
Yeah. No, not Olympic lifting, it's just strength training. It's like the old school German volume training. Yeah, it's ridiculous. So you'll see things that maybe people don't quite understand what it is that they're doing. And then, you know, you'll see maybe someone pop up with an injury or the soreness is way too much, or, you know, they're getting too big from it because it's just too many reps and sets and too much muscle breakdown.
That's bodybuilder stuff.
Yeah,
I just pulled it up. Like that's their classic. Like that'd mm-hmm. be like what Arnold would be doing back in the day.
Exactly. And you see some triathletes programming that stuff. And that's where I think it's good for us to make people aware of that. If you're going to add strength training in, doing, you know, 100 lunges, you know, because they went to a CrossFit class and someone told them they needed to do Murph or whatever is maybe not going to be the most productive thing for a triathlete. So I guess that's where.
Before we got on, I said I was doing half a Murph a day, which is not worthwhile for anything triathlon related. But anyways, that's why she said.
So that. Let's take this and focus on maybe some recommendations we might have. Like, and this is not everyone's going to fit in this box, right? But let's give like maybe a window of like, I would say that I probably prescribe like 4 to 6 lifts and ranging from say maybe 3x10 to 5x5. And like there'd be, and yeah, that would probably be like the range of all the lifts I prescribe somewhere in there.
I just wanted to say like Marilyn was talking about the volume training, which obviously would take a long time and just talking about an hour. Right. Yeah. So, what you just said, if you took enough rest and you were lifting it and you had progressed from built up to heavier weight, if you have enough rest in between to make sure you're actually like really lifting a relatively heavy weight and contracting a lot of muscles when you're doing it, the reason it takes a while is the rest break. The lifts themselves take almost no time at all. Right. Like we're talking like, let's say you do 2 or 3 seconds a rep, we're essentially talking about 1 minute of work, but you have to space it out enough to get the benefit from it. I was trying to avoid saying gains.
And you just said it anyways.
I know, but I paused. I just wanted to tell you.
You're totally right though. I mean, one of the mistakes, another common mistake with endurance athletes is they want to, like you had mentioned, like supersetting and stuff. They want to go too fast in the gym and not take rest. And I can, you know, let's take it to the far end of the spectrum. When you're training for just pure strength sports, I mean, you might do a set of 5 or even a set of 3, and then you'll sit down for 10 minutes, you know, and then you'll get up and do another set of 5 and add a little bit of weight to that. And then you'll sit down again for another 10 minutes. So it can take a long time, but you might only do, you know, 6 sets of 5. But the weight's pretty heavy. Maybe you're working at like 90% or something like that. So,
Jesse, to answer your question, she just said six sets of five. Like, for your average triathlete, you're probably going to be good at two or three sets of five, right? If you're talking about a heavy squat or a heavy deadlift or something like that, or even if you were maybe an older athlete who's trying to just maintain general upper body strength, if you're doing a bench or a lat pull or something like that, that's probably about right. I would say personally, it's very rare that I would ever have somebody do like less than four reps of something. Cause then you're just getting really extreme. And then I ask the question, how is this really helping? Your chance of injury goes massively through the roof, and how does it help your swim bike run? A lot less so, particularly cause it's endurance swim bike run. But that's kind of like the general base work. And then you're only going to do a couple of lifts, and you had said 4 to 6. And for me, it's usually like 2 or 3.
Yeah, I will. That was for like a strength athlete in particular.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the one thing to make sure of when you're picking sets and reps is the starting place needs to be, when you look at the athlete, is how, when you talk about heavy, how heavy can they actually lift? So what we run into a lot with endurance athletes is, you know, if you're going to prescribe low rep, high weight, one, they've got to, like you talked about, be able to hold form and have the mobility to do the lift correctly. And they've got to also be lifting heavy enough that low rep ratio is actually beneficial, that they're gaining strength. Because other words, if they're not really lifting heavy enough, they're just not doing that much work, right? I mean, if you've got, let's say, a, you know, 40 to 60 year old female, and their max one rep lift isn't really that heavy, and you give them a prescribed set of, you know, 4x3 or 4x5, and they're actually not lifting that heavy, they might not actually get any stronger from that, just because their max rep isn't that high. So you have to give that athlete, like you mentioned there, Jesse, like 4x10 at a medium weight, and then they're actually going to see some strength gains from that, if that's the prescribed, you know, what you're trying to get out of the gym. Now, a guy who maybe has, guy or girl, you know, who has a long history in strength training, they're pretty strong, their one rep max is pretty high, and if you give them, you know, like you said, 4x5 or 3x5, they're actually able to lift heavy enough that it makes a difference, they're actually getting stronger for it, then that makes sense. So I think when we're dealing with purely endurance athletes, the way I tend to lean, unless I'm with them there in person, is give them exercises that are safe enough that they're going to be able to hold form, because typically triathletes do have bad mobility. And so you want to give them whatever exercises they do that they can actually hold proper technique and form. And then chances are they're not going to be like strong enough to really get what they need out of the low reps and sets. Those are pretty unique elite type situations. So usually your starting point is going to be somewhere in that 4x10 or 3x15 at a light to medium weight, and then progress from there. See how they're doing. If they're getting stronger, is it applying to, you know, the swim, bike, and run?
On that point, I just realized as you're talking, it's very rare that anyone I've coached ends up doing a set of 3x5 or lower reps, unless they have a lifting coach they work with in person, or they have an extensive background in lifting before they got into endurance sport.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of it's because of confidence and how much time. Like if you're only giving them two lifts a year for 40 weeks of the year, 35 weeks of the year, you're looking at 70 workouts a year, and maybe they're 3 years in, they've only done 200 workouts, and it's never their main focus. And sometimes you're backing off the weight quite significantly for their swim, bike, run workouts. So there's not a lot of confidence built up in the lifting. And I mean, that's fine. You're not a lifter. But that would be another reason why you wouldn't go quite as heavy. So I feel like a lot of the reasons, Jesse, you said this earlier, is like, yes, we're all okay with lifting heavy in certain circumstances, but like the stars kind of have to align for it to make sense for you.
And I've also had that exact athlete that I'm talking about, where maybe they do need to lift pretty heavy weight, but they don't have the skill or the experience. So this is when you can get creative. So I've had some of my smaller ladies that it's like, okay, we've sort of maxed out the reps and sets on the, like, you know, in that 15 to 10 range, and they're not necessarily getting any stronger. So we need to start going to the lower and lower reps. Maybe we're going to like 5x8 or something like that, or down to those reps of 5, but we have to be so careful about how heavy for them. But I do want them to start actually picking up pretty heavy things. So we'll choose exercises like a trap bar lift or leg press or farmers walks, like things that are pretty safe for these types of athletes to move heavy weight around.
For the listener, every single lift you just stated has a more advanced version of it, and those have more chance of injury.
Exactly. So you're not going to do like a barbell deadlift for a heavy barbell deadlift for an inexperienced, unsupervised athlete, but you could give them a trap bar deadlift and they don't need to have that same mobility and they can still pick up something pretty heavy.
Can we quiz Jessie?
Sure.
What is the one thing that all the lifts she just had that are safer have that the more advanced lifts don't have? And for the listener, are you smarter than Jessie?
So like, the question didn't make sense. What?
I'm not even sure I understood that question.
Yeah, she listed four lifts and like the more advanced version. So the base would be like a leg press versus a deadlift or a squat. Like, what's the difference?
What's the difference between a deadlift and a leg press?
Like, what? Or why a squat leg press? Yeah, why is one more dangerous or builds more strength, however you want to list it.
Well, I guess, like, I mean, squat would be more dangerous and has a propensity to build more strength because, like, you've got to hold the weight in a certain spot.
But why?
Because the weight's freestanding and you're not, like, you don't have anything stabilizing you.
Stability. Yay. It took a while, but you got there.
Stability and mobility. I mean, you go through the...
Yes.
When you do a physical analysis on someone, it's, you know, stability, mobility, there's points in the body that you look at. This should be stable. This should be mobile. This should be stable. This should be mobile. And you go through that. And when you do a physical analysis of what lifts an athlete should do, they don't have one of those in one of those areas. You can look that up real easy online.
You knew the answer. It was a weird way to ask the question, but stability. So whatever lift you're doing, I think you and I are 100% on the same page. If you're trying to build into it, do the one that's more stable. Do the one that has less things that would throw you off balance when lifting heavy. And now, of course, if you're doing PT stuff, there's a million things. Like you said, like if you're doing a single leg deadlift with no weight, you're just probably barefoot trying to practice the movement. But that in itself is hard enough. So,
and then the other thing we could, you know, add to this and talk about is if you're starting to get limited. You know, you've got an athlete that's maybe you're looking at both those options and neither one of them are an option. You're a little bit stuck. The next thing to look at is tempo of lift and what speed, you know, in the different parts of the lift. So, you know, you might be able to do like 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 type ratio. So like, say you give someone who's quite experienced and has good form and they are doing barbell RDLs. And so you might say, we're going to go, and that's Romanian deadlift. So maybe I'm talking a little bit too advanced and people are going to have to Google a whole bunch of stuff, but that's okay too.
Try to explain too.
But we can go, you know, you can look at, okay, what's bar speed and tempo of lift. And so, you know, you might be going down on a 2 count and then up on a 1 count. And so same thing. So now maybe we're maxed out on how heavy we can go and we don't want to do a lot of reps and we're not getting heavy enough for the lower reps. So we can start to look at like tempo of lift now. And that might create a stimuli that you're looking for an athlete.
Right now with a lot of people lifting at home, that's definitely one thing that I've been playing with a lot with people that don't have a huge gym at their disposal. Is you can really do like some eccentric stuff to add that stimulus without having a huge amount of plates in your basement to throw around.
And that's really huge on like anyone who has injury issues, because eccentric load for tendon, like any kind of tendon type issue. So if you have someone who has high upper hamstring, Achilles tendonitis, that kind of stuff, that slow eccentric load is actually how you can rehab those types of things the best. So you might even have something where, like with the hamstring, where you slowly controlled, allow the leg to move out, like say you're doing on a Swiss ball or with bands, that kind of thing. And then the healthy leg brings it back in. So there is no even, you know, it's just the eccentric portion. So those kinds of things can become, you know, really, if you're looking at from a rehab standpoint, point of view, really important for endurance athletes.
I was just going to, do you want to add to that? I was going to kind of change topic a little bit.
Change it up.
Okay.
I was going to ask you a question to change it, but yeah, go.
Okay. I was just going to say, okay, so kind of the premise of this is it's the off season. Everyone's talking about getting in the gym. Do you think it's a good idea for every athlete? Like, yes, no, go. Elliot.
No. I mean,
okay. Well, so let me rephrase. If we, I want you to answer the way I want you to answer. So I'm going to ask the question again.
Okay.
Like if we include core work, like mobility work, Pilates, yoga, if we include, like, if we call the gym all of those things, would you say that there's a place for that in most people's programs?
In most, yes. But have you ever coached someone who was a gymnast for an extremely long period of time?
No, that's definitely, I have not coached a gymnast.
Okay, well, they often are just freaking yoked and have great mobility. And it's like, guess what? You almost have to work on nothing. Now, granted, if you do it for long enough, that can get you into trouble. And if they have an injury, you always have to address the injury, right? But if somebody was healthy and they have really good motor control and like gymnastics is the perfect sport for that, then there is a scenario where I see no need for actual strength training or mobility because they already have it. But these are also the people who like casually do backhand springs for fun, you know?
You know, so, I'll use myself as a little note. So from my background now, coming back to endurance sport and cycling, there is absolutely no way, like it's a deal breaker. I will not do gym. I've tried a couple times now to integrate it with my cycling. And I run into the problem of, because I was competing as a strength athlete for an extended period of time, and my body shape changed and my size changed just based on also how I respond to weights. I put on muscle really fast. So I looked like a lifter. I mean, I didn't look like an endurance athlete at all anymore. And I got really strong for a endurance athlete. And so that has carried through. Like I'm still, if you said to me, go and squat 135 pounds, I can, no problem. You know, do RDLs with, 125, that's no problem. Those kind
for
of things.
For the listener, I could warm up a real lot and try to squat 135 and only hurt myself.
Yeah. So my max when I was competing was, I think it was 230 or 235 and deadlift was 275. So a long ways away from what I was doing. But what I'm saying with that is now I can't lift heavy enough to be as strong as I was, but it's just enough soreness that it makes me not be able to hit any kind of intensity on the bike. And I also put on size really fast because I, went into strength sports for a period of time. So now I'm heavier and now I'm sore. So I can't actually hit the intensity I need to on the bike to get any better. And I'm not actually lifting heavy enough for how strong I am to actually get any gains from the strength. So for me, strength work is just like a deal breaker. It's like,
it's because you have old woman strength because, but like, that's the thing. Like it's great because you're strong, but you're too strong. And then what is a beginner lift will have negative consequences.
Exactly. Like, even if I do, like, if you tell me, oh, do like glute bridges and calf raises and stuff like that kind of stuff, I can do those all day long. I mean, I can still do handstand walks and all that stuff. Like I can, no problem, cartwheels, what you name it. That's like, I can do all that. And I don't get anything out of it. It's like, this is pointless for me to even do this. So I'm better off to do seated big gear reps on the bike or, max 30 second stomp starts in like my 52:11, like that kind of stuff. That's going to be more applicable to bike riding. I'm not going to get a sore from it and it's going to make me a better bike rider. So like, I'm an example of, if a coach comes to me and says, I want you to add gym twice a week in your program, and you have an extensive lifting background, so this should be easy for you. I'm like, no way. Like, this is a deal breaker. Like, I'm not doing it because I know I'll just go flying backwards on the bike. But you
might have like one or two minor things you have to work on if like your knee's hurting or like if your SI gets out of alignment. But outside of that, there'd be nothing. And as long as you're healthy, there's no reason to do it.
Yeah, as long as I'm healthy, for sure. I mean, I have had two knee surgeries and no way I would do any strength for it. No way.
Oh no, but I'm talking about like just basic like clamshells or something.
Yeah. Oh sure. Yeah.
That's what I meant. I didn't mean like you wouldn't be deadlifting for it. You'd be doing like,
Matt says to me, he's like, you could put 200 pounds on the bar and deadlift it like off the couch. So there's like no point in that for bike riding for me. So anyways, that's an example of a no. Like you said, is there a definite no? And your, Elliot, your example of like the gymnast, that's a really good example. So that's where when I started this conversation of, you know, you really, it's not like a one, it's even more so than swim, bike, and run. It's really, really not a one shoe fits all type of situation with the gym, with endurance athletes.
Yeah. And the flip side is if you're coaching someone who's, let's say they're 55 or 60 and they're female and their background is whatever, like just hiking or long distance running or just bike touring or something like that, and they want to get into triathlon and they've really never done anything overhead, you're going to have to do a ton of mobility stuff just to make sure that they can have their arms comfortable above their head. And they're going to have to do a bunch of small level strength work above their head just to make sure that their arms are healthy going above their head. And then the same thing, like if they haven't ridden a bike much, what do you have to do to make sure that, like, you know, that they don't get too tight and that they're strong enough just for putting force through the pedals. So their strength work might be quite extensive.
Totally. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Is that what you were trying to get at, Jesse? Because you thought you had an answer. So we threw you for a loop.
No, I'm glad. It's good. But I guess I would say that, yes, I agree. There are some extreme examples like a gymnast and Marilyn, but I would say for most triathletes, there are some good functional movements they can be doing that will help them. Like for example, like even if I'm not gaining a bunch of strength from doing lunges, I think it's good for me to practice opening my hip. And so like doing walking lunges a couple of times a week is really good for my hips. And so that's like something that I incorporate, and I might not get a huge strength benefit, but it can help me like stay healthy. And I think that most triathletes are in a situation where there are some things they can do to help them stay healthy. And that if they have a little more time in the off season, it can be a good time to like focus on that and establish those habits so that they can incorporate a little bit of that the rest of the year. So I guess that was one of the points I was trying to nail home, and you guys just threw me for a curve, but,
I totally agree with that. I mean, I think most triathletes, if they want a real sound starting place, they should start out with like a little warm-up routine, a good solid mobility routine that addresses shoulders, hips, hamstrings, and ankles. And then, you know, pick, like you said, 4 to 6 exercises that are going to be somewhere in that 8 to 15 rep range, and do, you know, somewhere between 2 and 4 sets of light to medium weight, and, you know, or just body weights or cords and bands. And, you know, if you start there and you do it twice a week, spread out at least 48 to 72 hours apart from one another, I think that's like a really safe starting place for most. Like we're talking about all kinds of extremes of like, yes, absolutely, no, absolutely. But if we're going to put like a medium happy place for people, if they're, I've got a home gym, it's the off season, I just want to have a start, that would be like a really nice starting place for someone to give that a try and then build from there. And, you know, I think that's a pretty safe place for people to dabble in the strength stuff for a triathlete.
I love to argue, and hard to argue against that one.
And just to echo something that Elliot said earlier, he was talking about people lifting with a strength coach. And I think that that's like, to get into that advanced place, to have somebody with you, I think is really important. And so it's hard to say you should be doing huge lifts unless, you know, you're sure that you're doing it with good form. Yeah. And there's a resource, like trainerroad.com has a place you can go, and they give you like benchmarks for triathletes to hit in order to say, be like functionally strong. And it's not perfect by any means, but it's a good place to maybe check out and say, okay, if you can do these things, and it's done in like percent of body weight. So again, it's not perfect, but it is a good place to look at if you don't have a coach you're working with, to say, okay, am I like functionally strong enough for my sport?
Yeah. I have a few little like sample programs too of different variety on my guidelines on my site. If people are just like, I have no idea where to start, I have like a at home and a TRX and then a little more advanced one. But even adding to your form discussion, you know, for the more advanced lifts, I feel like obviously I have pretty good experience, and I do have an excellent strength coach that would watch me do all of my lifts. I will tell you that like any times I've tried to do squats or deadlifts while I'm still riding a bike, you're so tight in certain areas, it throws the bar position off quite a bit. And so you are really better off to stick to exercises that you can maintain really, really like the stable, more exercises. Like if you're using a Smith machine or the leg press or trap bar, that kind of stuff. Cause even for someone who's really experienced, sometimes you're so tight from the endurance sports, you can't keep proper position of the bar. Even if you know what you're supposed to be doing, like the tightness just pulls the bar out of position and you're at a little bit of risk. So just be mindful of that. Even if you're listening to this and go like, I'm really experienced, I know what I'm doing. It's like, you might be, however, you also might be so tight that you're not actually able to keep good bar position.
So to me, what you just said is like great example that if you can't do the range of motion, period, you're probably better off working on your range of motion. Right. And like that to me, like we haven't talked about whether it's going to be like static stretching or doing like a dynamic warm up where you're like gradually getting more range of motion. But like you can hop online and I like to use Peter Sagan as an example of just like somebody who's like made to ride a bike, and you can just tell he has great mobility in his hips and he has amazing strength. And there's definitely some videos online where you can watch him be like, he's doing lifting and his strength through his range of motion is like out of this world, right? Obviously he's stuck to pedals, but even still, his ability to move the bike and maneuver and everything. And the reason he's such a great sprinter is there's no position on the bike he can't create power out of. And you can see that in those videos, but it's the combination, right? It's the motion, it's the range of motion plus the strength throughout the range of motion. So
yeah,
and totally. Jesse just left us since he's the host.
Where did he go? What's going on?
Oh, I wanted to say while he's gone, I looked up the Samson lift and I realized I saw the lift and I was like, oh, that's what that's called. But also Jesse
Samson
just got
stretch.
A new Samson stretch. But yes. Jesse just got a new dog and his name is
Samson. Right.
Yeah. And yes. I was like, so much Samson.
Yeah. I think the biggest things for triathletes to really look at are going to be shoulder mobility, making sure that their calves stay nice and springy and strong, posterior chain type stuff. So, glutes, hamstrings, that kind of stuff. Upper back, I mean, triathletes doing as many seated rows as they want. And that's only going to help them because we get so hunched over and rotated. And, if you're going to do some postural correction stuff in the off season, then, working on that posterior train, upper back type stuff is really good, opening up the chest, that kind of stuff. So
I want you to know we're all doing various poses into the Zoom. We're all posturing, getting really strong. Yeah, you're right. I agree. Jesse, did you hear us while you were off chasing Samson, your new dog we just talked about?
I missed a little bit. Hopefully I didn't miss too much. So I'll probably just repeat something you guys just said. Maybe not. We'll see. Take a little swing here. To Marilyn's point about like this, the stabilization, I think sometimes it might be good for an athlete to find that line and try and push that side of things instead of the weight. So if you're having trouble, like just doing like an RDL, like doing that as a body weight to do that and work on your stability, or like doing just a squat with a light kettlebell to work on that, like that power in the range of motion, even if it's lightweight, you can gain a lot from doing that and just being kind of like functionally strong, even if you're not getting actually strong.
We agree. That was not too much of a, I just want to know, do you feel like you get stronger if you scream lightweight after you do a lift?
Well, it's kind of like screaming Strava when you're on the bike path. You can gain a lot from those types of,
start screaming.
It's exactly like that. I'm what, maybe one person listening to that, Marilyn got that joke, but maybe not. Lightweight.
Yeah.
Did we cover it all?
I mean, I think it's such a huge topic. You can't cover all of it in 1 hour for sure. I mean, there is so many things. If people want to, type in and ask on the, I think there's probably a toolbar with the podcast when this goes up, certainly happy to answer questions, even give example programs, that kind of thing. But, you know, and I talked about like a good place to start if you're, you know, I think, you know, the most important thing is ask yourself, like, why are you doing this? And then, you know, pick a really, really safe starting point and come at it more gradually than you would swim, bike, and run if you're going to start adding this stuff in.
Yeah, your chance of hurting yourself for no reason is high. So be patient, try to be consistent with it. And if you're going to be a weenie in anything, swim, bike, run, or lifting, take it easy on yourself in the lifting, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's worst case scenario to say, oh, I injured myself and can't do this race because I was doing too much in the gym, which may or may not be helping you in the race. So again, being super cautious and really, you know, trying to repeat this for the eighth time is that make sure what you're doing in the gym is actually going to make you stronger, swim, bike, run, not just, you know, to look good in the mirror or whatever else.
One thing we should include before we go, Jesse, since you actually are lifting at the moment and you're actually competing, what have like the last 4 or 5, so you're 39?
Yeah, 39.
So like since you were 35 or so, you've been lifting a lot more often?
Correct.
So like how did that progress over the last 4 or 5 years for you?
So it took me, I progressed really, really slowly the first, say, 2-ish years, going from, you know, only like basically only kettlebells to actually moving up to say, now I'm using a trap bar, and I haven't gone past like say a trap bar for my deadlifts, because for me right now, like there's no point. And so once I built up to using a trap bar and like getting fairly heavy, I really haven't made any progress in my deadlift in, I don't know, 2 years. Which is fine. Cause I, you know,
you mean progress in the weight?
Yes. Sorry.
Yeah.
But I progressed up to be able to use a trap bar appropriately. And that took me like, I'd say probably almost 2 years of doing like kettlebells and other lighter stuff and working on range of motion, before I actually even touched a trap bar.
And how much of, you working on your range of motion versus the actual strength, like what do you feel like was most important for keeping you healthy?
Well, I feel like it's really hard to separate the two, right? Cause like, I'm working on my strength in the gym by using, say, a kettlebell, but that's actually really helping my range of motion and, yeah, I guess my ability to have strength in that range of motion, even though it feels like I'm working on my strength. Like, so I'd say it's hard to delineate like which is which, but I mean, I think having power in that range of motion was much more beneficial. Like I guess lately, like just increasing the amount I'm deadlifting is a lot more like icing on the cake. And if I was just racing long course as a pacing strategy race, it wouldn't matter at all. I wouldn't need to do that. I would just stop deadlifting probably altogether and just do like some kettlebell stuff.
And yeah, earlier in the podcast, you had mentioned how some basic lunges, you felt like they're more like stretching you, and that's because you were doing them like with optimal form and like getting really good hip extension. And for those listening, Jesse does not have great hip extension.
Yeah,
well, you didn't used to, and now it's almost okay.
Yeah. And I mean, I think almost okay is
good. It's enough. Huge.
It's good enough for right now. And yeah, I think that lifting and has really helped me to kind of like increase some of that range of motion and stay healthy as opposed to get injured. But I think I did take a really, really slow approach, and I was fortunate enough to work with a strength coach in person as I like kind of moved my way through that process.
I do think the very last thing that we should touch on with this stuff is, you know, I think we make it obvious that this is something that we're doing in quotations, our off season, whatever that looks like this year, but a period of time where, like, you started this before we were talking, Jesse, about like, you're like, I am so sore from this. I think it's important to remind people to keep their swim, bike, and run training when they start the strength, like their expectations, what you're going to get out of that, in line with that adaptation phase. So, you know, you're going to spend a period of time, if you are actually lifting weights, or even if they're just body weight exercises that you haven't done in a long time, you're going to have some soreness. And so, you know, you might not also be trying to PR your 5K or your FTP or something, because there's going to be a small period of time that you're pretty sore. And so you might be, you know, looking at taking a small hit in the other areas for a period of time until you adapt to everything. And it's just good to remember that, so that it can kind of play with people's head a little bit. They're like, I'm doing this to get stronger and I'm sore and I'm going backwards. So, you know, make sure that you're aware of that when you start it.
It's very important. Do not lift heavy with your legs the day before or the day after you're about to bike or run, particularly run fast. I think sometimes you can get away with maybe a moderately hard session and a lift afterwards, but you wouldn't do it in reverse ever.
So. And yeah, the other thing, just to add one more thing, is that I think it is important to kind of stay in touch with that throughout the year too. Even if it's in a very, very small amount, like doing a little bit of strength all year, I think is beneficial for a lot of people too. So I would recommend, if you're picking it up, try and keep a little bit of that consistency that Elliot was talking about earlier throughout the whole year, and not just for 2 months in the off season and then don't touch a weight all year.
Yeah, I will say when I was racing full time, I my old coach, he had me lift twice a week, and it was a pretty meaty lifting session twice a week, all the way up until 10 days before my races. So every Tuesday and every Saturday, I did like a pretty extensive gym session, and I did that my whole pro career, and like I say, all year round up to 10 days before races.
I just want you to know, Erica started back training on Monday. So she took like 3 weeks off after her last race, and she's literally on the other side of the door doing her strength PT work.
Nice. All right.
I didn't realize that when we started.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, we kind of scratched the surface on lifting, but there's a ton out there as we discussed. So if you do have questions, definitely send them our way. Do you guys have anything to add to this one?
No, I think we're good here. We giving people lots of things to think about as they head into the winter.
Yeah. Yeah. Have fun and stay safe. Thank you guys.
Talk to you later.
Cheers.
Bye, man.